From the Tie Cats Audio Network, this is Tie Cats Today with Braden Neville.
On today's episode, Vice President of Stadium Events and Operations with the Hamilton Sports Group and General Manager of the 2023 Grey Cup, Jerry Fonzo, joins the show to break down the newly released economic impact assessment. And Ticats 2023 first round pick, Dayton Black, joins the show to discuss his first year in the league and gearing up for his sophomore season. It's Tuesday, March the 12th, 2024, and this is Ticats Today. The reports are out. The numbers are looking very impressive for this year's Grey Cup game and festival. Sport Tourism Canada, formerly the Canadian Sport Tourism Alliance, has developed three tools called STEAM, Steam Pro, and Fest Pro, so they predict, collect, measure, and analyze event data across three primary channels, and it really gets into the impact the events had throughout that week. And thankfully, here to join me is the man who was involved in every step of the Grey Cup and Grey Cup Festival, Jerry Fonzo. Jerry, some big numbers coming in here, a lot that I don't understand, so I'm hoping you can help me break down some of the things I'm seeing here. But what I am understanding is, by looking at these numbers, the Grey Cup Festival and the Grey Cup were a pretty big success according to this economic report. But how much money exactly was generated from this entire event and everything we had going on?
Yeah, so it's come reported at $73.5 million, so nearing wow. $75 million, which is a huge accomplishment for our city. And, you know, when you break it all down for the size of our city, when you compare it to some of these other Grey Cups that are great cities that have hosted last Grey Cups, it's quite incredible what we were able to accomplish. You know, we talk about it, but you take a step back a year ago and we started planning this whole process and how we wanted to get the community groups involved and how we kept thinking outside the box and mm-hmm. different ideas that helped us get there were obviously, you know, the big concert side of things and all the events, hosting over 42 events. We really tried to make sure we were able to bring visitors and everyone from Hamilton and the community just embracing it. And that's really what it comes down to is a lot of the way they do these calculations, it's really the how many people joined you in your city. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think those are just some of the numbers that I'm sure we'll walk through today. But it's pretty incredible when you have, and just looking at mine, 223,000, over 223,000 attendees
wow.
in our city, which is yeah. crazy that attended our event. So when you think about that, that was the biggest reason why we said, what is the next event that we could bring in? Which is the next community partner that we can work with? Right. And you look at some of the big ones like the Santa Claus Parade, working with our friends at Sonic Onion on Supercrawl, right? Try to bring mm-hmm. all these people down into the downtown core. You talk about the out of town visitors. We had 33,835 out of town visitors.
Wow.
So just getting people from out of Hamilton to come into our city. And I can't even recall the number of how many out of Ontario. Yeah. Visitors we had, which was also quite incredible. So, you know, we're ecstatic with the number and where we landed. We're very proud and, you know, we're very thankful to all the partners and stakeholders that we had that helped us kind of do all this.
Incredible to see how many people, you saw Blue Bombers fans coming in from Winnipeg. You saw people from Montreal, from Saskatchewan, from all over. And it was an event that really brought the country together. And when it comes to the numbers and how much was generated, how much of that goes to the city of Hamilton? How much was that generated in the city itself?
The city itself, I believe, was over $29 million. Yep. That was just from the Hamilton side of things, which is incredible.
Yeah.
And then obviously it branches out through Ontario and then it goes right across Canada. So obviously the entire number, when you include all the visitors and it's obviously, and the amount of jobs that we created. And I can't yeah. remember the number off the top of my head, but creating those jobs was just insurmountable for this type of event, right?
Yeah. And when they say unique guests, is that out of town guests when
yes.
they specify that? Okay. So incredible correct. To see that many people in the city of Hamilton. The population must have doubled over the course of the Grey Cup Festival.
It did. It did. And if you walked around a little bit, especially on, you know, the biggest busy days were Saturday, a little bit into the Friday nights. Mm-hmm. But even just that's why some strategically, you know, Hamilton's a great city and it's a big city. And we had to look at how do we do things different this year. So we were the first year to make it more regional and mm-hmm. including Niagara Falls. So it was the largest regional Grey Cup and including Niagara Falls or incorporating that in some of our plans with the player awards, the Shaggy concert. We were able to have these events that we were extending people, but also bringing in guests that weren't necessarily just Grey Cup related, but they came to the festival. And that's mm-hmm. what it was between the Shaggy concert and Carrie. we had a lot of visitors that came for maybe just that concert, but then all of a sudden they went to the restaurants in the city of Hamilton. Yes. Oh, they checked out the Santa Claus Parade because it was the morning of this, right? So that was kind of the whole strategy behind the whole thing.
And I'm seeing spectator spending was nearly $16.3 million, which is crazy to think that's being spent in the city. And where is the majority of that money going when they're spending that money here?
A lot of it is just within our businesses, within our city. And that's the key point there, right? And that's why when it came down to these events and attracting people to the downtown core, attracting them to all these events, it was how can we make the multiplier of having people come and stick around for multiple days or attend multiple events? And that was the kind of biggest outlier when they do the surveys, is really understanding, does this customer come and go to two events, i.e. the game and maybe a team party? But do they check out the Player Awards in Niagara Falls? Do they attend a Carrie Underwood concert? Do they also go to some of the community events that we're hosting? And that's the key, right? So for us, it was how do we jam-pack that week that everybody does attend five or six events versus the normal maybe three or four events? And that was the key driver, is making sure every day we had not only multiple options during the day, but at the same time. So if you're not a huge fan of the Cheer Extravaganza, no problem. There's another event going on at the exact same time that might be for you. Yep. And that's what we really liked about it.
It was like a sensory overload for me. I was like, I didn't know which event to pick. I was driving around the city. Everyone was having such a great time. I think one event that I thought was so well done was the Team Party Headquarters, and the numbers are clearly showing that. But what are you seeing from the numbers here, and how many people attended that event and how successful it was?
Oh, the team parties were great. I think our capacity each night was over 6,000, which was incredible. And again, it kind of goes back to each night there was something to do. Do you want to go to Shaggy or do you want to go to team parties? Did you want to go to Carrie or did you want to go to the team parties? And each night the team parties did cap out, which was great. And that's kind of your evening list of events that you can kind of get out to. But no, like it was incredible. And that's where you do get a lot of the out-of-town visitors that are staying overnight. They're looking for those type of events too. And then you look at your core within your local community of, you know, bringing in local bands. We had over 45 bands total.
Yeah.
And you know that they also attract their own friends and their own family to check them out. Well, next thing you know, they're down there on James Street enjoying their friends' music. Well, they don't just stick around for them. They stick around for another song for the next band. They grab food, they grab lunch, and they're grabbing drinks. Next thing you know, they're hanging out for 6 hours. And that was the target, right? Yeah. Getting as many visitors as we can. And how long can we get them to stay within our city?
And how easy was it to work with that Super Crawl group? And then they seem to make this go to another level, but with all the music and everything that happened. But how good of a partner were they for you guys?
Oh, it was great. Working with Tim Potasik and the crew there. They're professionals. Obviously, they work closely with the city every year when they run their Super Crawl in September. And we knew that was a successful event. Working closely with them, we knew we can kind of do the same style event, although they concentrate theirs on the evenings. Ours was kind of the 3-day event, but it was all day. It started at 11 a.m. and went right till 8 p.m. But we knew working with them was a key. It was very important for the success of this event. And working with working with the city was incredible. I think this year was probably our best year. Over the last few years, we've been working more closely with Hamilton Tourism on all the events that we've been running here at Tim Hortons Field. And I think it actually helped hosting the NHL Heritage Classic, hosting the last Grey Cup in 21. I think all of those allowed everybody, all the team parties within our city to work closely together to make all these events super successful, because they were all very challenging. You know, we talk about the number of 42 events in less than a week, and they weren't minor events. You know, you had a few banquet events with 500 or 700 people, but a lot of these events had thousands and thousands of people. So it was, you know, pretty incredible what we were able to pull off.
Actually being nominated for an award as well. That's how successful this was. Named a finalist to the Tourism Prestige Awards in the category of Canadian Sport Event of the Year with a budget of over $1 million. But what do these awards say to the success of the event or being nominated for this award? It seems like such a big thing.
Yeah, it is. It's an honor. It's an honor to be recognized. And obviously we hope to win those awards, right, with all the hard work. But you know what? It's pretty cool. Like I believe that's this Friday on March 15th. We're down as the finalists. So I know they've been sending us information, and we're hopeful to win that award. But again, It's great to be recognized. I think it's great for the CFL just to be put on that stage. We already know the game is huge within Canada. So we want to make sure that, you know, winning that award really keeps it on the map and making sure we're getting the recognition it requires. It is a great event. And I think the goal every year is to raise it to the next level. And I think that's what we're hoping BC does. We're hoping BC can now bring it to the next level and it continues. And, you know, when we get it back, hopefully in 8 or 10 years, that now it's like, okay, guys, how do we make it even bigger now? Because every year someone's done something new. And I think this year we did a few new things. When you talk about music, when you talk about regional, we did these new elements to add a twist. Mm-hmm. And obviously we know that helped when it came to our economic impact, which is incredible. So now we want to see, you know, as every other CFL team now comes to the table, what ideas do they come with? What are they going to do differently this time around? Because it's not just about the game. The game's obviously a main, you know, we call it the cherry on top at the end there. But what are you doing for the fans when they come down? What's the fan experience, right? Yeah. And that's what you want it to be, because those fans come down for 3 to 5 days. It's a, you know, it's a vacation. It's a pleasure for them. So we got to make sure that there's a bunch of stuff for them to do.
And I mean, it's going to be a tough one to top. I got to say, like, with all the artists we saw, I mean, it's hard to top Green Day, Carrie Underwood and everything that was going on, but I'm sure BC is going to do a great job. Before we get into the game itself, there's no events without these volunteers and the people who volunteered their time. How much of an impact did those volunteers make in ballpark estimate? How many volunteers were there for these events?
No, good point. So it's, we had over 800 volunteers, which is incredible. And you think about it, for every event, as our manager was kind of outlining these events, it was, you know, which events do we require 4 volunteers or 8 volunteers or 10? And it was a constant cycle, right? We had volunteers morning, evenings, but throughout the days. And having those 800 volunteers were incredible. Basically a huge success for our event, because you can't have the eyes and ears out there. You can't provide the customer service to our fans without those volunteers. So if it wasn't for them, you know, I don't think any of these events could really happen.
Yeah, big thanks to those volunteers. And I saw them all around. Everyone was so happy and seemed so easy to be able to give you a hand. If you wanted to know where something was, the volunteers were doing an excellent job. Getting into the game, I'm looking at these numbers and they're pretty crazy. 8.9 million Canadians tuning into the game at some point on TSN or RDS. And I mean, that seems like a huge number.
It's incredible. And I think when the CFL came to us and started saying these numbers and sharing with our team, obviously everyone's blown away. And that's what you want to see. You want to see numbers, you know, we talk about it, but you want to see these numbers climb every single year. And that's where things like, you know, we knew it was a great matchup. We knew having Green Day involved, the fans were excited. Like, we had fans that, you know, everybody wants the Hamilton Tire Cats in the game, if you're in Hamilton, of course. But if you weren't in the game, and you knew at that point Green Day was performing, you knew it was going to be a great match, you know, we were able to see Winnipeg lose. It was great. So I think our fans were there. They really enjoyed it. They embraced the opportunity. And yeah, like those numbers, you know, it's incredible.
It doesn't hurt that it was probably one of the most exciting Grey Cups we've ever seen. I've never seen an ending like that in a Grey Cup. So I think that really helped out a lot. And Green Day just so happens to be one of my favorite bands growing up. So
mine too.
I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. Then I'm looking at the demographic here. It seemed like we had everyone, all sorts of ages, were all attending this game.
You're right. And that's probably one of the best things about the CFL. It's not just about one demographic or one age group. We're pretty spread through between males and females and the ages and the kids. And you saw it at the Grey Cup, actually. Even with the Grey Cup, I know it's a slightly higher price ticket. It's a championship game. So historically, it's less, you know, family oriented versus a regular Ticats game, let's say. But there were still kids out there. And I think that's the big part is, you know, some of our fans and our demographics where they want to bring out their kid to experience this event because it doesn't come that often to your city. So I think this was the opportunity for a lot of parents to say, hey, let's bring out little Johnny here because we don't know when's the next time he's going to have that opportunity. And it's a great memory. So I think it's something that we see all the time at Ticat games, and it's incredible. And I think that's great for the league to keep it healthy.
Jerry, looking at all of this, and there's so many numbers that are coming out in this report, and you can look it up now. It's on the Ticats website. But when you look at all this as a whole and you and your group, do you see a huge success here?
We do. We definitely do. And it's hard when you started this process with our friends at the Sport Economic When they were calculating these numbers, it was interesting to see how they'd come up with it, because I understand it's a survey and it's a sample survey and they extrapolated over all the events. And but it was incredible to see, because as you kind of match this up to some of the past Grey Cups that are in bigger markets, and it's incredible what we were able to accomplish, right? Almost $75 million for our market. When you compare that to some of these massive markets, like, this is incredible. You know, I don't know what the exact number is, but I know we're in the higher percentile of successful Grey Cups, which is incredible. You want to be in that top 5%. Yeah. And that's you know, I can't say much more than that. We're ecstatic about it. And it's nice to see that kind of it all come together, because Grey Cup now even has been over for, it's been 90 days now. And for us, we're already kind of getting ready. We're moving on. We're worrying about Forge. We're worrying about the Ticats regular season, you know, what events might be coming up next. And now that you see this come up, you're like, wow, this is great. But also with all these awards out there, it kind of brings it all back to light.
Well, Jerry, a great job to you and the rest of the Hamilton Sports Group, and an incredible event and a great week for CFL fans to come around from around the country and enjoy some CFL football. So congratulations to you and the rest of the group, and to all those volunteers and everyone else who had a part of this. So once again, Jerry Fonzo, thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks for having me.
Big thanks to Jerry Fonzo for helping to break that down with me. I'm not exactly an expert in reading graphs and looking at profit margins, so good to have him on to break down what was a very successful week in Hamilton. My next guest just completed his first season in the CFL after being a 2023 first-round pick, and is heading into his second season in the league, hoping to make an even bigger jump than he did last year, O-lineman Dayton Black. Dayton, how you been doing, man? How's the first offseason going for you?
Oh, it's been great. You know, after that long season, having a couple months off here just to get back into the groove of things, it's been amazing.
Where are you spending the off season?
I'm back here in Saskatoon, where I went to university, just training with my strength and conditioning coach, who was also my trainer at the Huskies. So, yeah, I've just been here ever since.
Has training been going on since the off season started, or did you have a little bit of a break there after the season?
Yeah, you know, it took a couple weeks, obviously, right? Like I said earlier there, it's a long season and whatnot, but I got swinging into the full swing of things probably right around December, middle of December, give or take.
Nice. So what kind of training are you doing right now? What are you focusing on in this training?
These last couple months just have been strictly strength and conditioning and speed training, and then we'll continue that going forward, and then we'll start working on field, O-line technique drills and whatnot.
How are the wheels looking? Are you getting a little faster out there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're feeling good. We're feeling light on the feet right now.
Nice, nice. So how often are you training? Is that a daily thing?
Yeah, we're roughly, like, depending on how the body's feeling, 5 to 6 times a week.
Wow. Okay, so that's pretty aggressive. It's a nice little you're definitely getting in your work for sure. Yeah. The first season in the CFL is always crazy for any guy, but how was it for you getting adjusted to playing pro ball and going from U Sports to the CFL?
Yeah, no, it was awesome. I had a ton of fun. First off, like, it's been a dream of mine to play professional football, and getting to do it with the Ticats was even better. So, yeah, first season, it was very quick, fast, like it hits you like a train, but, you know, I felt like I adjusted pretty quick, and I had a great group of guys around me in that O-line room. Gibby, he was great asset, so, you know, my transition I felt was pretty smooth, and obviously there's lots to improve on for next year, but yeah, I'm excited to get back at it.
What did you notice about the transition? What was the most difficult part about adjusting to the CFL?
You know, just like, I would say the strength and speed, obviously, right? Like, you know, I go from playing 18 to 21 year olds, and now I'm playing full grown men, right? So it's like guys that have been in the league for 12 years, so it's, yeah, I'd say that's probably the biggest difference, is just that experience and knowledge also with the game.
You mentioned Coach Gibson. What was it like getting to work with him? And he'll be on the show this week as well. But what was it like getting to work with him, a guy who's been around the game so long?
Oh, it's awesome. You know, he just has answers for everything, right? Any little question you have or problem, you know, we'd always go to him. And just having a guy like that with us, working with us every day, it was amazing. And he definitely helped improve my O-line game a lot.
A guy who came in mid-season last year was Scott Milanovich as the offensive play caller. Now he's the offensive coordinator and the head coach. What is that relationship like with him, and how was it once he came in, and how did things kind of change for you?
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, I didn't feel like we missed a beat. You know, it was pretty seamless transition, and No, yeah, Scott was awesome. That's my first time ever really having him as a coach. And he used to coach my head coach, Scott Flory, like in Montreal. Okay. So Flory had nothing but good things to say about him and whatnot. So I'm very excited to get back to work with him as our head coach.
What can you say about his philosophies? He's so particular and he breaks down every little aspect of the game. But what can you say about him and how he works and how his mind works?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, he's not letting those small details go where everyone's running to the ball. You know, we're giving it our best. It's just every little detail, you know, we're doing it with a purpose. There's a reason behind everything.
Yeah, and a few guys on that O-line will be returning. Actually, pretty much most of the O-line is going to be returning when you look at it. And the first guy I want to talk to you about is Brandon Revenberg, a veteran and all CFL All-Star, a guy who's been there and done that. What was it like getting to learn from him, such a savvy vet in this league?
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, that was the guy I sat beside every meeting, everything. Mm-hmm. Like, I was picking his brain every time I could. So, yeah, having him and just, like, he was so accepting of me and willing to help teach me what I didn't know about the CFL and stuff. And then, yeah, so just sitting beside him every day was a reward in itself.
What do you think about his personality? The guy, he's a pretty funny guy. He's sneaky funny. What kind of jokes does he crack with you?
It's hard not to like the guy, you know. It's just, he puts that out there. And yeah, I had a great time in that room with those guys.
Are you going to be growing your hair out like Rev as the years go on, or are you going to you're going to keep it short?
I don't know if my mom would like that.
Another guy coming back, David Beard, an absolute monster at center. And what can you say about him and how he works and how his mind kind of works when he plays the game?
Yeah, he's arguably the smartest guy in that room, right? Yeah. He knows everything inside and out. And same thing, like Beard, me and him were roommates on the road all year. So I really got to know him well, and we connected quite well because he's obviously a CanWest guy too, went to Alberta. Not a fan of, but we connected, like, just even outside of football, like, me and him both big hunters, do a lot of talking about that and stuff. So having that guy also just in the football room was amazing to have.
Do you ever bug each other about that rivalry?
Oh yeah, all the time. Except for when they beat us here in the CanWest semifinals, so it didn't go too well.
Yeah, you guys don't have any bets going or anything on whenever those two are playing?
Nothing too crazy. We like to keep it pretty civil, but we'll give it back and forth to each other for sure.
I could go on about a lot of guys on this O-line, but the final guy I want to ask you about is Colter Woodmansey, another guy who's returning, a younger player. But what's it like getting to play with him?
Yeah, it's awesome. Just seeing a guy, you know, closer to my age. No offense to the other guys, but like, obviously me and Woody are a little closer in age, and just seeing a guy that's able to do it also from U Sports is awesome to see. And I'm excited to get back to work with all three of them.
When you first stepped into the CFL, at what point did it kind of all hit you that you were playing pro ball now? Was there a point you can remember where you're like, okay, like I'm here?
Yeah, you know, it was probably, I had a rough training camp, like dealing with my shoulder and everything, right? Didn't get a lot going on there, but then those couple practices before that preseason game in Montreal, and then, yeah, suiting up for that game and running out, it was pretty wild playing in front of that many people. And yeah, you're realizing that, wow, this is actually real now.
What's that crowd like for you to play in front of at Tim Hortons Field?
Oh, it's awesome. You know, they're great fans. Like, it is packed almost, like, basically every game, right? It's loud. It's fun to play in front of those people and our fans and perform for them. It's second to none for sure.
Was it what you expected? I know you heard, we talked when you first came into the league, when you were first drafted, if you can remember way back then, Dane, but is it what was advertised whenever you played in front of them?
Yeah, for sure. Like, obviously not, you can't ever replicate that, or like, no one can ever explain to you what it's actually like, right?
Yeah. And,
you know, I grew up watching the Bombers and the Riders, being from the Prairies, and seeing that, I didn't really know if anyone would ever compare to that, but the Ticats fans are definitely right up there, if not number one.
Yeah, and I think that they're one of those teams that they love their big, strong guys, and those guys who are playing those positions like you play, or the D-line, or whatever it may be. As this offseason continues, Dayton, what do you got going on for these next couple months as we gear up for preseason here?
You know, nothing. Just strictly training hard and getting ready for this season. You know, this is, I feel, a bigger season for me than last year, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I've actually proven I can play a little bit here, right? So now I'm ready to actually take that bigger step forward and get ready to play.
You feel like you can make that jump a little bit more of a jump than you did in your rookie year in the sophomore season?
Yeah, for sure. I don't feel like, you know, I don't have anything to really adjust to. I just need to keep learning and perfect my craft as an O-lineman.
Are the nerves a little bit calmed going into this training camp as opposed to when you were a rookie going into your first experience? Do you feel like you're more poised now, a little bit more of a veteran going into this situation?
Like I wouldn't say so much as a veteran, but I'm definitely more comfortable with it. Like I know what to expect. I know everyone in the organization now. I know like a lot of my teammates, the O-line, right? Coming out of that draft, you know, I met all the coaches and that was about it. Yeah. Right? And yeah. I didn't even meet them all during that draft process and everything. So, yeah, I'm definitely more comfortable coming into camp this year.
One final question. We got training camp coming up, but what is it about training camp that gets you excited? What fires you up about getting started here?
Oh, you know, we're just back to playing football every day. You know, there's nothing else that matters. We're just there to play football and learn football and do football. So I'm just pumped to play football again.
Well, Dayton, I'm excited to see you, buddy. We'll be at Ron Joy Stadium very soon, and enjoy the rest of your off season. And looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you again. Appreciate you having me on.